As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily. The challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard, loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshaies, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're going to have an exciting show today. We have with us Gretchen Demp Simmons, who is here with the event planning and real estate, and we're going to just pick her brain and listen to her and the things that we can be doing to put ourselves in a much better position. We're going to go to our normal break at the first of the show to give everybody an opportunity to get on the line, because we don't want anyone to miss any part of the show. So we'll be taking a break, and we'll be right back.
Initially, it wasn't even really on my radar, but my mother was one of the first ones who encouraged me to think about it because I was very good in sales. Also, because I did a lot of retail sales, especially in the wedding and event planning business. And then one of my managers at one of the bridal shops I worked at said, you know, you really need to think about doing real estate separate and apart from my mom. So I looked into it, and also after I got married, I was looking for something that would, I guess, be a little bit more flexible in the event that I might have children or something like that. I wanted to be able to manage my schedule a little bit better, and it seemed like a good fit.
And we've come to understand that most of the time, purchasing a home is a big part of people's net worth. And so it's an important part of what we do as we move forward and try to gain positive net worth. And we know that there are people who earn quite a bit of money in the real estate environment. So how do we, as minorities or people of color, get put ourselves in a position that we can have a positive experience in real estate?
Well, it's almost like watching the stock market. Timing is very crucial. Also, saving is very crucial, getting the right advice and just kind of making a plan is very crucial, especially at a time, for example, like this. In a lot of cases around the country, the real estate market is quite tight. So just going out there and thinking that you're going to find exactly what you're looking for right away may not happen. It's going to take maybe a little bit extra time and, you know, planning on everybody's part. So one of the things that I would suggest first is, you know, look at your timeline. You know, how far out is it between now and when you want to actually buy the house? The other thing I would look at is, why are you buying the house? Is there a need or just something that you want to do?
And how quickly do you have to time the environment? Is there something that gives you a clear indication that it's time to move, or can you bide your time and save your money so that you are properly ready to make the move at the right time?
Well, for example, I would say if you're looking at now and let's say a few months from now or 6 months from now to buy a house, I would say start now, just for the simple reason that interest rates have been gradually increasing and so have home prices. The problem with that is you may have to compromise on what you want. It just depends because there's not, you know, as many properties as there are in some other, you know, periods of time. The National Association of Realtors has put out an article a couple of months ago about the 10 U.S. cities with the biggest housing shortages. Five of those top 10 cities are in, for example, the western part of the country, a couple in California, Santa Rosa, and Sacramento. Also a couple in Oregon, Seattle, Washington, and then you have some further east up north, Omaha, Nebraska is one of them, in Indiana, Michigan, Grand Rapids and Detroit, for example, have tight housing markets, and in Buffalo, New York. So you have to kind of decide, okay, if I'm looking for a house in those areas, say you get a job in one of those areas and you're having to look. My suggestion, of course, the first thing is to get a real estate agent. Also, shop around for your mortgage companies, because the key thing before you set foot toward any house is to be pre-approved with a mortgage. And then you go from there. You have to kind of be prepared in terms of your finances, because expenses will come up in terms of inspectors and appraisers and having other people to kind of that are in a part of that process in terms of making your purchase. And then if you're selling, that's you're on the other side of the coin, where you may have something that's very desirable, but you still have to make sure that your home is in tip-top shape, you know, and you might want to even get it appraised yourself. A lot of times the buyer gets it appraised, but it's a good idea also if you're the seller to have an appraisal on your property so you have a realistic idea of what your home is going for and what you may need to do or want to do in order to improve the value of your home.
What is the preparation difference between buying a home for yourself and buying a home for investment? What are the differences in how you go about purchasing a home in those two different aspects?
Well, for one thing, I would say nine times out of ten, and that's just a phrase, but if for the most part, you're going to find that your interest rate is going to be higher as an investor versus as an owner-occupied buyer. So you're going to have to look at, I would say, coming with more cash. You also have to be, I guess, a little bit more picky in terms of who your mortgage company is going to be. personally, in terms of investing, I would rather buy with cash and not go through a lot of the hassles that you go with an investor than, you know, trying to get a loan, because you know, you're going to jump through more hoops for sure.
And when you're purchasing a home, going through a mortgage company as an investment, could you look to, should you be looking to make a monthly profit right away?
I would say not, just because it depends on what you're buying. If you're buying something that's move-in ready, ready to go, that, you know, then you're in better shape than if you purchase a property that you have to do some work in order to make it move-in ready. Also, too, my advice is that you, depending on if you're planning on managing the property yourself or securing a property manager, which is what I would suggest, there's going to be a cost involved in that. But it's well worth it because they do a lot of the screening for you. A good property manager will do a lot of the screening for you, things that they're trained to do that you as an investor might not necessarily be trained to do. I mean, and a lot of investors, they don't even want to be bothered with that process. They just want to make the purchase, make sure it has a good return as it's being rented and you know, and as it's being sold down the road.
So would you encourage people who may have a lump sum of money who are just reaching retirement age and they have lump sums of money, would you encourage them to get involved in real estate, or what would be the safest way for them to get involved? Would you encourage them to pay off their own home first, or what would be some of your suggestions to people who are looking to retire and may have lump sums of money that they want to put in different investments?
Well, I can only speak, you know, personally from a real estate aspect because I'm a realtor. But I do agree with, for example, most financial advisors, which will probably tell you to diversify, and it depends on what age you're retiring. Are you retiring as soon as you're able to collect a Social Security check, or are you still working and retiring down the road? Most financial advisors these days will tell you 70 is probably the optimum time to retire. But you also have to look at health issues. You have to look at where you are financially. Is your home paid off? How many more years do you have before your home is paid off? Is it worth it to you to, in some cases for some people, let's say, refinance? I mean, the later you are in life, it may or may not make sense to refinance, but you could refinance and take some cash out depending on how much equity you have in the home and maybe use that toward a purchase. The other thing that to look at in some cases, there are a couple of good products out there, especially for retirees, and one is called the self-directed IRA, which I mentioned the last time, in which you can make, some self-directed IRAs, you can make actual purchases of real estate through the IRA, but it's primarily not you making the purchase, but your IRA making the purchase because you personally can't touch it. But you can kind of direct the operations of what goes on in the IRA in terms of what property you want to have purchased through the IRA. And then whoever manages your IRA decide, you know, will help you decide if you know what property manager, in that case, you probably would definitely have to have a property manager because you, as a you know person, are not supposed to touch the funds in the IRA, and so any purchases that are made through that IRA, that is also untouchable from you, you know. And so that's one way. The other one is called a HECM loan, which is similar to what we used to call a reverse mortgage, but it's and they've made some modifications in that now. So it's very good if you're, you know, retiring and you, let's say, have a house. You want to, let's say, sell your house, use some of the money from the home sale, purchase another house. Let's say you're downsizing. You can use a HECM loan to also make part of that purchase, where you don't have to make payments on the loan. You've put in, let's say the house is $300,000. You can put in half I don't think, I mean, less, you can't go less than half from what I understand. You can put in 150 and then you get the HECM loan for 150. Therefore, you are not the home equity conversion mortgage. I think that is what it's called. And I'll have to get the exact, but I think it's called a home equity conversion mortgage, but it's HECM, H-E-C-M, HECM. And you can purchase a home if you're going to retire using that loan and any cash that you have coming forward, and then you don't have to make the monthly payments on the house.
Well, let me just ask you, in terms of that, when people are making the transition from being a family-sized home where they need additional rooms for their children to downsizing and maybe only needing two bedrooms, one for themselves and maybe a visitor, when is a good time for them to make that decision to transition and think about maybe downsizing and putting some of the cash away?
Well, some people don't downsize. For example, some people will take the additional rooms and rent them out. That's additional income for them. I even know one couple who converted their home into a bed and breakfast up in Georgia. And so the kids have gone to college and everything like that. They have a nice size home spread out with acreage, and they have a main level, and then they have kind of a master suite upstairs, which I stayed in. And then down below, they had like a game room with a pool table and everything like that. But they rented their home out as a bed and breakfast. People would come there for weddings, use the house for weddings and the land for weddings to get married. So that you could keep the home that you're in if you want to do a variety of things with it. However, for some people that don't want that upkeep and maintenance, they need to probably start looking at that as the kids are getting grown and moving to college, or if they have spouses or some other family member who pass away and they, you know, are no longer in need of the extra space. And so, you know, as you see these types of situations occurring, it's kind of good to sit down maybe with a financial advisor and say, you know, is this a good option for me in terms of doing that? And then once you've sat down with your financial advisor, then, you know, if you've decided it's time to sell and find something else, get with a good realtor. And then also during that process, and depending on where you are in the country, you might want to get a real estate attorney as well.
Yeah, it seems that a lot of what your plans are related to real estate has a lot to do with where you are in your career and how close you may be to being able to accumulate funds to make additional investments. Is there a strategy that you think people should use related to saving money so that they can determine whether or not they want to get into real estate as an investment?
Well, let's say you are nearing retirement and in good health. Let's say you're 5 years out. And like I said, I'm not necessarily a financial planner, you know, I'm just speculating from what I've seen. You can put money right now because a lot of the interest rates aren't good. But for example, there's a CD, which still gives you pretty good interest, especially if you are with a credit union. You might want to put some money into a CD. Also, put a little bit more money into your IRA if you're going to use the IRA to purchase the home. If you are going to, it just really depends. Like I said, a lot of it depends on your health and what type of responsibilities you already have, what type of responsibilities you see occurring down the road for yourself, and if this is something you really want to take on. A lot of people, they divest totally from having any type of responsibility for a home, and they do facilities. So it just depends on your life and everything. But even in that particular case, if you decide to divest from your home, you still need to have some funds to live off of. So I would suggest, like I said, you know, if you feel comfortable with the stock market, you know, there's a variety of things that you can invest in. Some of them, you know, are riskier than others. And so you don't need to have all of them in a high risk situation. Do some high risk, do some moderate risk or some low risk, and to make sure that you don't, let's say, lose it all in one place if something happens and you have ample opportunity to grow your funds.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're at 30 minutes in, and we're going to take a short break and come back and allow our guests, our call-ins, to ask some questions.
Administration, the things you need to look at: do you have a solid job? What is your debt to income ratio? If you have a solid job, career, and you have a low debt to income ratio, then it's a good time to be looking. If it's something that you really want, or you feel like you have to make a move at this time, that's really something that you need to consider. because you can't necessarily predict what's going to happen, especially so early in the administration. But you mm-hmm. if you are confident about what you have in terms of your career, and if you're confident in terms of, are you going to be at the job for a while? Have you been at the job for a while? What are your finances? Have you, how's your savings doing? Have you started planning? Is it something you can't, it's not something you just say, the sky is sunny and I'm feeling pretty good and I think I'll just go out and buy a house. I mean, there's not that many people that can do that. So, you just have to look at where you are financially, where you see yourself down the road. Are you going to be able to manage a new home? And don't go above and beyond, your means. That's why I say the first thing you need to do is to make sure your credit's intact and then also check with a mortgage company. And they can give you kind of a good idea of where you stand in terms of how much house you can afford. Also, James, I want to do something because I made some promises on the last time that I was on your show. There were a few people that asked me about their particular situation, and they were in different states. And what I wanted to encourage them and everybody to do is to, if you have questions that I can't answer, is to contact their Association of Realtors. Each state has one, and I think the people that you had on your show, they were from Nevada, or they were looking in Nevada, Arizona, and California. So I wanted to give out the websites for those particular associations of realtors, if I may.
You please.
Okay. For Nevada, it's www.nvar.org. That's Nevada Association of Realtors, NVAR.org. For California, it's CAR.org. That's www.CAR.org, California Association of Realtors. And for Arizona, it is www.AARonline.com. That's www.AARonline.com. Online.com. So I wanted to give those out to some of your listeners that were listening the last time.
Let me go to one of our callers. Audrey, how are you doing this evening?
I am absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Audrey, do you have any questions for Ms. Simmons related to real estate at all?
I don't at this time. I just joined, and I'm not sure what may have been covered. So give me a little bit, and I'll become engaged a little later.
Okay. Let me ask you this. You mentioned what is the upside of selecting a fixer-upper for people? Well, some people don't want to go into a position where they have to right away start putting money into a place. But what would you say would be the upside to purchasing a fixer-upper?
One of the upsides that I would say is you get a chance to make it your own. It will be uniquely yours. A fixer-upper does have its problems, therefore it's called a fixer-upper. But you can go into a fixer-upper and say, okay, I want to change the layout if that's possible. If you don't want to do that, go to that extent and you like the layout, you can say, okay, I want to change the flooring. I don't want carpet. I want tile or I want wood flooring or whatever the case may be. But as you're doing it, you create your own change it and make it your own, and you're shop around. It's predetermined for you in terms of what's there.
Well, I have to
Buying from a builder. You know, because you get a chance when you're having a home built to pick the stuff, but then your selection is limited. The good thing about, you know, doing a fixer-upper, you know, a lot of cases you can shop around and find stuff relatively inexpensive. You can go to places. I went into one place the other day that, you know, had, I was thinking about redoing some things in my bathroom, and they had some vessel sinks on clearance, and they had some other tiling on clearance. And I said, you know, for a powder room, you know, I could, you know, get away pretty easily with just purchasing some stuff from this place and have money to go toward other things in the house.
Well, let me ask you, this is a personal question, and I have to admit that I have no decorating experience whatsoever. But what happened was, as I took control over a home that was given to me by my parents, I inherited, and I just grew tired of what I saw was a constant investment in carpet. I either was cleaning the carpet or I was replacing the carpet. So I decided to go to laminate and to tile, and I just find that it is the tile is remain nice. You know, you mop it and the laminate is nice. But what is the upside of carpet? Why are people so in love with carpet when you can put down tile and laminate and pretty much don't have to go back until the stuff is just really looking you know, rough? But that ceramic tile will last forever.
Well, speaking from the perspective of a person who loves carpet, okay, I like carpet. I like all of the flooring, but I tell you, there are some people that like carpet. For me, I like to walk around barefoot, and I don't like to walk around on I'd prefer walking around on carpet than walking around on a cold surface. The other surfaces tend to get colder quicker. I like the way it feels under my feet. So I like to dance barefoot in my family room. So I like carpet because I like the way it feels under my feet. There's that cushion. It's not as hard. Yeah, there are some maintenance, but there are some carpets that are a little lower maintenance than other, you know, carpets. So yeah, and so each of them has their benefits and their drawbacks. You know, it depends on what you like, how it looks. If you're a person that, let's say, you know, you have a lot of small children, then you may need a different type of flooring than somebody else who, you know, that doesn't have children and, let's say, you know, they just want something very low maintenance, you know, but they don't necessarily have to keep it up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of...
So for you, I mean, carpet's not your thing, understandably, but there's wood flooring, there's laminate, there's, you know, stone, there's all kinds. There are some places that are actually using concrete and refinishing and resurfacing it and painting it to look, you know, like a really, really nice floor. So there are a lot of options out there, you know.
Well, one of the things I noticed with the carpet is especially – when you're going from the foyer to the den, that what you start to see is a pathway,
right?
The carpet.
You have high traffic
areas.
A
portion of it that is going to wear down first. So those are the places where people are walking, and so
right. You have high traffic areas, and some people use runners. I used to have a runner in my high traffic area, and I took it up because. In some cases, for example, when you have elderly people, you don't want to have a lot of the throw rugs because they might trip. So, you know, sometimes you have to take those up for various reasons. But you can do that or, you know, some of the older things that they used to do was put the plastic runner down. I don't prefer that. But you can get like a nice Persian runner to go across the carpet, looks just as good, and all you have to do, you know, every now and then is take it up, shake it out, vacuum it, vacuum the carpet underneath so it, you know, resumes its, you know, plushness, and then put, you know, put your runner back down.
Well, one of the issues that I know that I have with my older home, too, and a lot of these questions are from my personal point of view, is that the bathrooms back in the early 70s or late 60s were small. They weren't really made for you to spend a whole lot of time in or, you know, lounge around or any of those things or take your time. And so, you know, you find yourself hating these little small kind of efficient bathrooms where you just got what you need and none of the luxury. Have you ever seen what people may do to kind of upgrade their bathroom areas when they're made so small?
Sure. One of the things that I did in the house that we moved in, the house that we have is built in the mid-80s. One of the bathrooms had, it was the main bathroom for three of the bedrooms, and I decided that I wanted a double vanity, a single vanity, because it makes no sense to me to have all of those bedrooms, and then if, you know, two people want to doing is brushing their teeth or whatever, they can use the double vanity. And I was told there's not enough room, you're not going to have that much counter space or whatever the case may be. Fine. I put in my double vanity. It looks great. It's probably better than my master bathroom right at this point, but that's coming. But you can do all kind of things to make it look nice. They have space savers that, you know, if you need cabinetry and you don't necessarily have a lot of floor room, the space savers that go over the commodes, you could put those up. They have really nice ones. I saw one at one of the like Bed Bath & Beyond or something like that, that was bamboo that I'm looking at. And it has a closed cabinet. You can put stuff in the cabinet that you need and close it back up. So you have your space savers. You have the floating shelves that you can put up too. And I know a lot of the older homes, for example, my home, the bathrooms have that big, wide, long mirror, which some people like, and it's okay. There's, you know, good and bad. But then also you could take that down, paint your walls, put up a couple of nice decorative mirrors that you're, you know, so you could find something at the thrift store or antique shop, or you can go in a variety of places that just sell the mirrors and get a couple, you know, one for each vanity. Change out to lights. You can upgrade what you have, and but you know, just try to declutter and use, you know, maybe I always for a long time lived in a lot of small places. So my motto was best use of vertical space. Try to use your walls and put shelves on it and stuff like that, and not necessarily spread out so much. If you use tall cabinets or tall shelving or whatever, that makes the more utilization of the space, and it, you know, you don't spread out so much on your floor area. So that's what I would suggest.
And another thing, you know, as you get older, what I'm seeing is that there are times when I want to enjoy something a little bit different than a shower. And the normal regular tub is not conducive to when you're 6'6" and you got arthritic knees. And now these new step-in that they have where you can kind of step in and sit on the bench, and you have these new jets seem to be a lot more accommodating for people who want that tub feeling but don't want to necessarily lay completely down, and now you can have these things where you can have these step-in tubs that seal with the jets around to give you a lot more luxury experience. What are your thoughts on those?
Well, I like those too. You know, that's one of the reasons I like to go away and take a few days in a nice hotel. But also, you have the jets, but they're also making now a lot of these different, I mean, even though you have to use the shower experience, they're making a lot of these different types of shower heads that you can put in there as well, where you can get different jets and stuff like that, adjustable heads, wire heads, and all that type of stuff. So you can modify your current, you know, shower and make that more comfortable. And also, too, in your current tub, you can also get seating for your tubs. You know, for older people, they have a lot of those seats that they put in. A lot of the newer showers, if you convert, they can have them even built in. But even if you can't get them built in, you can go and get like a teak wood stool or something that you can put in order to just, you know, take that break and sit down. And then, you know, if you put in the new jets, the new shower heads and everything, just sit there and let them aim. Let them go.
Well, and, you know, I look at that. Now, let me ask you, when you're trying to upgrade your home, where is the place where you can get the most bang for your buck related to investing in your home so it increases the value of your home?
Well, the one thing I would do is I would say shop around. I am a firm believer in window shopping, and people think that it wastes a lot of time. But when I'm ready to do whatever project it is on my home, I know exactly where to go because I've already shopped it out in my head, or I've already taken notes on a pad, or I've already put the notes in my phone. So the one thing I would say is to shop around. And look at different places. When we changed out, when I said I got the double vanity, I changed out the faucets in the bathroom to go with that vanity, and they were on clearance, you know, and that's 10 years ago, and they still look good. It was that brushed nickel, and it had the faucet head, it kind of curves over. Like a hook, but it's beautiful. And, you know, make sure though, when you're trying to shop around for something that's less expensive, make sure it's less expensive and not just cheap. You want to make sure that whatever you get is quality and is going to last a long time. Because otherwise you are just throwing away money. You know, if you feel like, you know, it's going to fall apart in a couple of years, I wouldn't do it. The other thing I would do is go for classic looks. Don't go for something that's faddish looking. Unless you're willing to change it out when the new trend comes, you know, go for something that is going to have a long time appeal for you and have good resale value when you get ready to sell the property.
Okay, and another thing, and again, I'm picking your brain right now. The older homes used to have what we call, I think, a breakfast nook, you know, where you'd have this L-shaped thing that comes out with cabinets on one side and maybe three or four seats inside the kitchen area where, you know, your family could sit down in the kitchen and eat a non-formal meal. But now a lot of these homes now have the circular island look where you have it faces the dining room or the den area. What are your thoughts about maybe taking some of that den space and creating enough space to have you a island look in your kitchen?
It depends on your taste. I mean, for some, it's a great idea. The homes these days, and a lot of the families that use them these days, they're a little less formal. You know, I grew up where you had a designated dining room, a designated living room, a designated family room, and then designated kitchen. And now a lot of the what they call open concept homes kind of have it where, you know, everything is open and seen. You know, parents who have young kids like it because they can keep an eye on the kids. If you're entertaining guests, it's a way to have, I guess, conversation with guests while you're in the kitchen preparing. To me, I like it, but at the same time, I always tell my husband, I said, it kind of takes away from the ta-da factor when you bring out the main meal and to the dining room. So it just really depends on what you're looking for. But, yeah, you can do that. You just have to, it depends on what your tastes are and what your needs are. And then, like I said, also, you've got to look at when you get ready to sell the property, is that going to be a hindrance or a help in terms of the value of your home? Is this something that just appeals to you? That's okay too. But you just got to figure that in when you get ready to do it. You might want to do something temporary. I know they have a lot of these carts or islands that you can buy just separately that look really nice, and they also have storage space, and they have an area where you can sit and do that as well, instead of maybe doing the built-in peninsula, I think you were talking about. My family had mm-hmm. went to a peninsula, and we sat around the peninsula. Part of it, you know, one side of it was in the kitchen, and the other side was on the side where the family room or den was.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking out of the box, so to speak, in the terms of doing some of the, you know, doing some of the modern looking things, and trying to develop a new look. I know for myself, I'm kind of torn. Because I have this lovely lakefront property, and I have an older home. And so if I'm going to stay there for the remainder of my life, there's some things that I'd like to upgrade just for myself personally, not necessarily for the selling factor. One of the things I was thought about was possibly putting a second story onto my house and putting a master bedroom up top, so that I could do what kind of bathroom I wanted and not be inhibited by the structure downstairs. And with being able to put a deck on the back so that I could go out and look out over my lake front property. And have you ever seen a successful second story to a one-story home before?
There are some successful ones. I mean, it's a really difficult thing in terms of the structural integrity. When they build two-story homes, you know, they build it, you know, with a two-story plan in mind. You can do that, but you might also want to consider building out versus up. The thing that you have to look at, too, is how much value are you adding to the home when you build that second story? And will it fit in with the neighborhood? Because, you know, you've got to look at just – that's just like, for example, adding a pool. Adding a pool, depending on how long you're going to stay there, you may not necessarily get back what you put in. But the thing that you have to look at is how much is it worth to you personally? Personally, for example, me, I'm ready to add a pool like yesterday. Will it, you know, increase the value of my home? It may or may not, but it's probably not going to increase it as much as what I put, as the dollar amount that I put into it. Plus your insurance rates, you got to look at other things too. You know, not only the physical cost involved in terms of putting that there, but you've got to look at what is that going to do in terms of your insurance rates and all that type of stuff too. I think it's going to be more difficult to build up than to build out, and you may want to look at, do you have the room to build outward maybe create a look for you that, you know, overlooks the lake and also accommodates you, you know, because as you're getting older, you know, some people as they get older are not a fan of climbing stairs. That's another thing you have to look at. If you have, you know, have health issues, do you want to climb the stairs every day? You know, how often are you going to find yourself trying to find a sofa or something to sleep on downstairs rather than take the stairs to go up every night?
That is one of the downsides. And one of the things I was thinking was, where would the stairs go? Could you impale the original house and have stairs inside and it would certainly be a downside if you had the stairs on the outside. I mean, it's really important. I guess you'd have to get an architect and see how you could change the structural integrity of the house successfully. Because I've seen some people who've done it unsuccessfully, and it really looks very odd.
Right. Because that's the thing, you've got to look at whether it's going to detract from your home. You know,
right.
It's going to detract from your home, it's going to detract from your neighborhood. You're talking about if you have to put stairs on the outside, which, you know, the other thing you're looking at too, you can put stairs on the outside, it's going to be easy access, not for you, but for anybody trying to get into your home through the exterior. You know, so you've got to look at safety issues and whatnot. So I'd think carefully, but the best thing to do is to, look at different. There's tons of material online. You know, I mean, what I would do is go online and look at the type in the benefits of adding a second story. What are the pros and cons of having a second story, adding a second story onto a first story home?
All right, we're going to take another short break, and then we'll come back and see if there's anyone who would like to ask any questions and continue our conversation.
Keeping it nice.
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. Ms. Simmons, tell us a little bit about your radio show that's going to be coming up next, and what is your purpose or direction, and what are your going to be your goals that you try to make related to your show?
Okay. Wow. My show is called G's Power Hour. It will start May 1st during the lunch hour, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. So while you're doing your power lunch, you can be listening to G's Power Hour. And not just real estate. Actually, starting May 1st, it's not going to be a whole lot about real estate. Now, the first day we are going to talk about mortgages. I have the mortgage person that I first worked with, he's coming on, and he will answer mortgage questions, and we'll talk a little bit about mortgages. But we also are going to explore some other areas. I have a regular dietitian coming on, beautician that's coming on, and, I have my cousin who is with Orlando Police. He's going to talk about, you know, some crime-fighting tips and stuff like that, and we're going to cover a variety of different subjects, because my goal is to, you know, make sure that, you know, you're informed and, you know, you come away with what I call a power plan that, you know, you can use to help yourself and to help somebody else. You know, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about it.
Now, in terms of, one question I did forget to ask, do you think it's important for homes to have now these alarm systems and these new ways to operate the lights and the air conditioning? Should we be trying to develop our own homes in these efficient and modern computerized homes?
I don't necessarily know about computerized, but trying to update your home and make them more efficient is crucial. If you're trying to save, you know, every penny, if you're trying to save on your electric bill, your water bill, you know, whatever utilities you have, you know, even on, you know, your entertainment, the key thing, yeah, you've got to do some updating and upgrading, even as much as, you know, paying a little bit more for your light bulbs. Our energy company, Duke Energy, had a program in some of the neighborhoods where they went out and for free they exchanged a certain amount of light bulbs. They changed the shower heads. They did like a water heater blanket, to lower the cost of what you're paying. They changed the faucets to put on an aerator, saving you money in terms of what you're paying. So yes, some of the stuff is just because you want it, you know. But and that's good too. You know, you just have to have a balance. But to make your home more energy efficient, yes, because if you plan on selling your home down the road, that is a good thing to have in terms of being able to say, you know, we only paid this much in terms of our electric bill because these are some of the upgrades that we did to our house. We got a tankless water heater, maybe, you know, and you have to look at, you know, what's the cost for installation and the cost of, you know, how much money it saves versus what you currently have. And then also too, a lot of, like you were talking about, older homes are built a little bit differently than the newer homes. What's the benefit of maybe doing some changes in your home to, you know, in terms of insulation and other things to make it more solid, more energy efficient? Because, you know, you're trying to save money to do, you know, you're trying not to give away your money, you know, unless you want to, but you're trying to save money to do other things that you enjoy in your life.
Right. Now, I know now we can get some conversation from Ms. Audrey on that one, because you mentioned Duke Energy. So, Audrey, what would you like to say about what you just heard?
You won't believe that I'm just flipping over. My son called me, so I had to put you on hold. I can't believe I missed it. Would you repeat it, please?
Okay. I'm in Florida. I'm in Orlando, Florida. And I would suggest calling Duke Energy and finding out about the program. But what it was, basically, they had some neighborhoods that they targeted, and it depended on the income and everything, where they went around and they gave light bulbs. They changed your light bulbs. They changed your connection on your shower head. They changed your shower head, you know, to more efficient, energy efficient shower heads. And a lot of this stuff that they did was for free for some of these neighborhoods. Now, I don't know if the program's still in existence, but you need to check with Duke Energy. But in either case, whether it's Duke Energy paying for it or you have to pay for it, get them to come out and do a home energy assessment. It's crucial because your light, what you're spending on your lights, what you're spending on your appliances, all of that stuff really matters in terms of how much you are spending, you know, you're just giving away and blowing, and how much you can save and use for something else more energy efficient. The other thing is when you're going to buy your appliances and you're going to buy your electronics, to look and see if, you know, they are Energy Star approved. You know, that is an important thing. But I would suggest you have to use the internet. You know, there's a lot of downside to it for some people, but there's a lot of good side. You know, do your research. You know, we had to buy a wheelbarrow this weekend. I asked my husband, did you go online and shop around for the wheelbarrow? No. So we could go around and shop around for the wheelbarrow. Better to do it online than out there running around with your car and burning up gas and then making a mistake.
Yes, thank you very much. And you're exactly right, James. I'm very familiar with that program. I concur 100% that, you know, reach out to your utility company and receive. It is a free home audit check. In addition to what you may think, they check your refrigerator filters, your air conditioned filters, and make just recommendations. And yes, I'm familiar with the program. You're exactly right. They targeted certain areas. And it was just an opportunity for us to make sure that we let the community know that we are here for partnership. My question was, and I'm sure we're about ready to end, but and I'm not sure if it had been asked before, about the importance of your curbside appeal, if you would. Can you share a little bit about that with us?
Well, one of the things they say is important is location, location, location. A lot of that has to do with curb appeal, as you know, there are other things that are involved. But yes, you want to have a nice looking lawn that does kind of elevate your property values in the area. No one wants to go in and see, let's say, a bunch of cars on the side of the road where they can be parked in the driveway, for one. No one wants to see, you know, that you haven't raked your leaves or that you, you know, the leaves are out in the street. You know, you can, and you don't necessarily have to bag your leaves. You can, you know, one of the reasons we got our wheelbarrow, because what we're planning on doing is using our leaves for mulch. Trim your hedges, you know, make sure they look nice. And also you want to trim them down so they're not hiding your house or hiding your windows. You want to be able to see, and you want your neighbors to be able to see, because if somebody's climbing in your window, you don't want the bushes hiding them. So, yeah, it's very important to trim the hedges and, you know, trim your bushes and the trees and everything, because you want, you know, you want people to see the home and see the appeal that your home has. And then you want a nice yard. And if you don't want to spend a lot of money on your yard, get sod or, you know, some places use grass seed, some places use sod. Florida sod is very important because the soil is kind of sandy. Get something that's drought tolerant, get some sort of ground cover that you don't have to maintain a lot, especially under we have a couple of big oak trees. We're having a hard time keeping grass to grow under the oak trees, so we're looking at other possible ground cover and to make sure that it looks nice. Keep your lawn furniture, if you have lawn furniture in front, keep it painted up, trim it up. This is pot calling kettle. But, you know, I because there's things, this is this time of year we're getting out and we're getting ready, we're working on our property as well. But just making sure, you know, that you have your place that looks nice. You don't want it to look neglected, because if it looks neglected, then someone else is going to think that you don't value, you know, what you have. That will take down your property values.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems I have. You know, my property, when I was growing up, and again, my father built my home in the late 60s, early 70s. And we had these small trees, and now these trees are huge trees. And it costs so much to get rid of them, but now they are not, even though they provide shade, they provide all these leaves as well. And suddenly,
right.
I keep wondering, should I go ahead and make the investment to get rid of them, knowing that they may cost me, you know, $500 or $600 per tree. And so
I wouldn't get rid of them. I'd have them cut back. I wouldn't get rid of them because, like you say, they do provide shade. If you leave all that area where the trees are covering, if you leave all that bare, guess what? You got the sun giving you direct pounding on your roof. And if you don't have good insulation, guess what? You know, you got more heat that you're trying to cool, and then your electric bill goes up. I would have them cut back, and that should be done regularly. If you notice, especially since the hurricanes we had years, about a decade back or so, the electric company goes down now and cuts the trees and the branches off of the power lines, you know. And we should be doing that, cut that off the house. Because also, too, tree limbs die, they fall down. You don't want them falling in through your roof. Because that does happen. Because it's happened to me. Okay. So, yeah, you know, I wouldn't get rid of them. You know, you still want that shade. You want to be able to enjoy the shade, and you want to be able to keep a decent electric bill. But I would cut them back off the house, because the other thing that happens, that has happened to us, is the squirrels will jump on your house, jump on your roof.
Right.
And if they find a nice weak spot in your home, you know, you have that issue as well. So,
right.
You know, just keep everything like she was talking about in terms of curb appeal. You know, curb appeal is not just about how things look, but how your house functions. You know, so, and then you were talking about, you know, doing a little less work, you know, let's say in your yard. Find what, you know, perennials, you know, nice flowers or nice green leafy type of plants that you don't have to keep replanting and don't require a lot of work. Those are good things to have, too.
Okay. All right, we're going to, we're at the end of our show. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back and have our final word for today. James C. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. I want to let everyone know that we're on 7 days a week, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 o'clock West Coast Time. On Saturdays and Sundays, we're here at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 o'clock West Coast Time. Call in to 657-383-0309. We want to make sure that your voice is heard loud and clear and unfiltered about the kinds of things that impact our lives now and in the future. Andre, let me come to you and just ask you the question. Is there anything, how do you feel related to owning multiple properties? Have you ever thought of the benefit, or have you ever desired to have more than one property?
I have considered it. I'm not a person that's very handy around the house, but I do know the value or the opportunity of having that as an additional income. But I also understand the responsibility that goes along with it. So while I have thought about it, I have not completed enough research to determine if indeed I need to move forward. But it is something that could be a great opportunity. Not only will you be providing, you know, housing for someone, again, it's an opportunity to generate additional income.
You know, I have really been looking into the idea of owning. I love the beach, and I would love to have a home on the beach or have a condo on the beach where I owned or owned with a group of individuals where we could rent it out when we weren't using it. You know, there seems to be so many options available now where you can make a lot more money just renting your home out for a week or renting space out. Originally, Ms. Summers, you talked about the lady who turned her home into a bed and breakfast, but there are a number of computer companies now that are dealing with people not staying in hotels but staying in very nice, comfortable housing where they're willing to pay a little bit more for a different experience. And I think I'm just so interested in the possibility of doing something like that or investing in a nice oceanfront home or condo of some type.
Well, the one thing I would say is this. First of all, are you doing it for business or are you doing it for pleasure? Because if you're purchasing a property for the business aspect, it's going to be different than purchasing it for your personal aspect. Because if you're purchasing it and planning on staying in it, you lose the business benefit. You need to talk to a tax advisor about that because once you purchase a property and you're renting it out to Joe Public around the country, that's fine. But once you stay in it, you cannot claim it as a business. And that's my understanding. So you have to make the decision when you go in with these people to purchase this property, is this going to be our business? And if it's going to be our business, then this can't be our personal thing. Now, you might want to go in with some people and purchase a property for personal use and maybe do it, I would say, similar to, I guess, a timeshare, but on a personal level, and use it in that respect. But if you're purchasing it as a business, I would talk to a tax advisor. Because they're, you know, or get some sort of advice from your small business associations or SCORE around the country and find out how can you structure that as a business. But once you structure it as a business, you have to take yourself out of the equation personally. It's a business.
All right. Listen, we are at the end of another great show, and I so appreciate Gretchen Dempsey Simmons coming on and talking to us about all the things related to real estate and what we need to know and how we need to position ourselves in order to have an opportunity to purchase property. And it's something she's going to be with us every second Wednesday of each month. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things. Like she said, on her show. Gretchen, tell us again about your show.
Well, it's G's Power Hour. It will start May 1st during your lunch hour. If you take lunch between 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m., I will be there Monday through Friday. And we're going to talk about a variety of different things. Coming up in May, we're talking about we're going to have an expert from a hospital in Massachusetts to come on and talk about celiac disease and the gluten-free, so we can get the 411 on what gluten-free is all about and who really benefits from those types of diets and who really needs to go on gluten-free diets. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, you know, hair care and all kind of nutrition and stuff. We've got Mother's Day coming up, you know that, in May. We also got Memorial Day coming up. We want to, you know, honor our service people. And then, like I said, we're going to have Mortgage Monday, first Monday of every month. We're going to have someone to come on and talk about a variety of different mortgages because it's not as simple as you think it is. So we've got a variety of things going on for May. June is Black Music Month. I have a couple of people coming on for Black Music Month. I'm not going to tell you who. You're just going to have to listen. So
it sounds awesome, and I want to let you know that I certainly will make it a part of my schedule so that we can expand our network to the point where we meet the needs of as many different people out there as we possibly can. I want to thank all of you who are a part of the show today, all of you who are going to be listening, let you know that it's important that we be here and you use this platform to get your answers, questions answered. You get your voice or your opinion out to those across the country. This is a platform that we want you to know that we want you to benefit from. Again, we're on 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on that for 90 minutes, and that's enough time to allow you to have your voice heard without interruption. We look forward to you being here tomorrow, Thursday. We'll be here Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, allowing you for your voice to be heard loud and clear.
Loving you is easy 'cause you're beautiful. Making love with you is all. Stay with me while we